You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is Black Hollywood Live Portraits. Featuring intimate, in-depth interviews with Black Hollywood stars and influencers. Black Hollywood Live. Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live Portraits.
You and
Dario Crystal.
Hey, what's up, everybody? You're watching Black Hollywood Live Portraits. I'm your host, Dario Crystal. Here joining me is DJ Jesse J.
What's up?
And the lovely Courtney Stewart.
What's up, everybody?
Our very special guest today is an actor. He's a singer-songwriter, and we are listening to his new single, Famous, right now. And he's also starring in one of the number one movies this weekend, Get On Up, the James Brown biopic. We have Keith Robinson with us today.
What up?
I'm feeling this single, my man.
You like that? I like that?
And you're showing the guns.
I like this. This camera that I can see myself in.
Yeah, you get
getting
your full pose on.
I got on
right
my
now.
Extra medium James Brown t-shirt. Rolled up today.
Man, congratulations, man. You got a lot of good stuff in the works.
Thank
right
you,
now.
Brother. I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
And so, you know, I was reading the reports and people are raving about mm-hmm. this James Brown biopic.
Yeah.
And you were definitely in the top of the weekend box office draw. So that's
this
huge.
Is true.
That's
this
huge.
Is true. This is good.
And now your music, we're going to get to a little bit later, but that single, Famous, is releasing tomorrow, correct?
It is. It'll be available tomorrow, so you can download it, bootleg it, you know, whatever.
Bootleg it.
You know, just listen to it however you need to. If you want to buy it, great, I recommend, but, you know, there's other ways. I just want you to hear it.
Why'd you title it Famous?
A lot of different things. I think, for one, I kind of wrote it after a scene that we did in the movie. I don't know if you saw the movie, but when we take the stage, Little Richard leaves the stage and we get on stage and Chadwick, James Brown's character, says, "We're the Famous Flames," and then Allo goes, "Flames," and I go, "Famous." So I went back to the hotel and wrote a song called "Famous for Loving You," meaning what if you were wanted to be famous for actually loving somebody and being known for being unconditional to someone else, and that was your main objective, as opposed to being famous for being trifling and
right.
all these other things
right.
that you know, media kind of exacerbates.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never use that word, big word. So I felt like that was kind of an honest, soulful sentiment that would be dope to say if a woman, like, "I want to be famous for loving you."
Mm, I feel that.
So, and for me, it just meant my personal meaning was, no matter how much I do TV and film wise, I will always be drawn and want to be famous for the music, because that's my first love. So it's kind of my ode to music. But for you, brother, you can play it for your girl and say, "I want to be famous for loving you."
So I like that.
It's a dual like meaning.
That. It's a dual meaning. I feel that. Now, you were born in Kentucky, grew up in Greenville, South Carolina, and then later on moved to Decatur, Georgia, right?
Close. I was born in Kentucky. I grew up in grade school, Greenville, South Carolina, moved to Augusta High School.
Augusta, okay.
Went to college in Athens, Bulldogs, moved to Decatur and lived kind of my formative creative years in Atlanta, and then I moved right down the street from the studio.
And, well, very close.
There you go.
Boom. In this heat. Growing up, did you always have singing and acting and performing in your life? I mean, at a young age, did you know this is where you wanted to be
well,
when you grew up?
I was always drawn to it. My brother was huge in music. He always had all the latest records, so I was really drawn in music. My mom was a singer who could have sang secular music with Motown when she was coming up back in the days of Aretha Franklin and all that, because she grew up in Alabama and she was blowing up churches and stuff. So the music thing was kind of always in me, but I was really focused on playing ball.
Okay.
Up until high school. So music, you know, I'd be singing and everybody was like, "Well, sing something, Keith." It was like I would just sing at the lunchroom or just entertain people, but I was focused on playing ball. And then I suddenly stopped growing. So I figured, well, maybe I should get serious. And I got in a group in my senior year in high school and we kind of started winning a bunch of talent shows around Augusta, Georgia. And once I heard that first scream from the front row,
that'll do it.
I was on
that first fan reaction.
I was like, "Yo, this is it."
he was like, "And Famous will be coming
everything.
Very soon."
College, hold on, Dad.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you did end up going to college, University of Georgia.
Yeah.
And now I read that you had gotten a music contract with Motown while
right.
you were still
in
college.
High school?
Yeah, you've been reading.
I've been reading about you, my brother.
I like that. Yeah, my second year, my sophomore year, I got out of a group in high school. I went to college. My first year, I got in another group with two other guys who were in groups. We formed a group, started performing around campus. Then our sophomore year, we got a deal with Motown Records.
Okay.
And we were signed for all of about, I don't know, 2 months. It was a short run. We got caught in executive shift, long story short. And we started tooling around Atlanta trying to re-sign. And ultimately we said, we got to go to where it's at. We got to go to New York, or we got to come out west.
Yeah.
And we chose L.A. because it wasn't as much concrete. And, you know, it kind of resembled home, the weather. We figured we could make our way around. And we hit I-20 and kept driving, moving into a couple hotels. And the rest is history.
And then how did you initially get in front of Motown? Like, how did that even take place?
Well, there was this concert promoter, huge concert promoter, had a production situation with Motown Records. So they were looking for acts. And a guy heard about us performing on campus. We had won this AKA talent show.
AKA.
Yeah. And he heard about it, and he drove us to Atlanta to audition, you know, with a lot of other groups and acts. And we won. He chose us. And from then on, it kind of, my introduction into show business had officially started.
And then you were kind of working as well as an actor. You moved to LA and you got a lot of films and TV projects.
Yeah.
And now, did you have an agent at the time? How did you kind of work
now,
that angle?
The acting thing was a total accident. I met this girl who was in Atlanta, back and forth, lived out here.
It always starts with a chick. Every time.
Shout out to her. You know who you are. I went to an acting class with her just to kind of see what it was all about. It seemed like everybody had a headshot and an agent. I was so far removed from the acting thing. I was like, I'm so glad I do music, because I was just like kind of scoffing at it. And I went and read a scene because I wanted to kind of improve my stage presence. And that was it. I left 3 weeks later. The teacher thought I was decent, told me to go read for this role of Power Rangers, which I didn't even know what it was, but I figured it could pay my third of the rent. Yep. So beat out like 5,000 people, man.
Yes,
lost 10
huge.
Pounds.
Yes.
Got lost 10 pounds on those McDonald's salad shakers. Didn't have a headshot. Got a disposable camera. Shot out all the pictures, me and my boy in front of the apartment building. Bam, bam. 1 hour photo, Kinko's. Here's my headshot. And I got the role. I was on TV within 6 months of being out here, which was...
Wow.
I see now, being in the game, how much of a miracle and blessing that was.
Absolutely, yeah.
People were looking at me like... My boys were calling me like, man, let me fill out an application. I'm going to get on TV, too. And I was like, I don't even know how I got here, bro.
Yeah.
I'm just here beating up aliens, and they paying me, you know. It is what it is.
And so, but like music-wise, you know, to get something like that, obviously, you know, you're saying music was your first passion.
Mm-hmm.
But like something like the Power Rangers, which is this huge.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at the time, like, how you just didn't know that where that was going to take you. And especially with the fans from something like Power Rangers, you're kind of in that forever now.
Forever, yeah. Yeah, MorphaCon is the end of this month, so it's going to be crazy. But yeah, I didn't really know. And I think that kind of helped me looking back, because I kind of walked in the room with this carefreeness, being myself, because that's all I really... There was no preconceived notion. I didn't know what to do. I read the role. They wanted a natural young guy, kid. And that worked to my advantage. And I think after looking back, I realized how it's like the biggest, most successful kid series in you know, television history or something like that. But at the time, I was just kind of going with the flow, going with the moment. And I mean, I was still sleeping on the floor, network TV, because I flipped the coin and he got the bed. I was on the floor. It was literally like that. You know what I mean?
What was your music like at the time?
At the time, I was in a group. So we were still cutting songs, and I was paying for studio time because I had a little extra money.
Were you guys playing gigs out and stuff? Or
We were more rushing labels with our dads, because back then it was dads. I gave away our dads to some cat at Interscope. We got kicked out of Interscope. We was running them all. Anywhere we could get in, we could fit in just to be seen. We were trying to do it. We were, you know, cutting songs. We sang background on one of Warren G's album, I Want It All album. So we were just hustling like a lot of artists were, you know what I mean? And then I was kind of moonlight, 9 to 5 in it with the Power Rangers. And then as soon as we rapped, I was with the fellas in the studio, in the lab with the fellas.
Are you still cool with them today?
We're still cool, but you know, we don't really talk anymore.
Hmm.
That's a...
So you are Kelly then from the public announcement.
You know, you would think that. You would think that, but no, that wasn't it. I think LA has a way of, you know, it separates you. Like, if you really want this thing, you're going to have to go get it. You can't go down the street to grandma's house and sleep. So that kind of, it kind of separated the hungry from those just kind of coasting. I think that's what happened, because once my TV film career kind of took off, I began to hustle. And I was like, yo, let's go. And it's like,
it happened.
We kind of exploded. Yeah. You know, one moved back without telling me. The cat who rode shotgun, he moved back. And the other guy, we just kind of drifted apart. You know what I mean? And, you know, groups do that. They run their course. Hey, the Eagles broke up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Listen, Jodeci broke up. So, you know.
I know.
Jodeci broke up. They're back together, though, aren't they?
They're trying.
They're trying.
Like the rest of them.
Shout out to Jodeci.
But what gave you sort of, when did it shift for you that you were going to follow the acting thing? Like that it wasn't just the Power Rangers, like.
Well, I mean, it shifted. I mean, there was never a shift. I just feel like it added on. I knew that, hey man, I'm good at this. I have a knack for it. It didn't feel like much of a transition performance wise. And, things just started building, and I wanted to get another credit as soon as possible, mm-hmm. so that my career wouldn't have started and ended mm-hmm. with Power Rangers, so people would take me seriously. And I was very focused on that, and I knew that that would maybe create more lanes for my music. And that's what it did. I think right after Power Rangers, I did a TV movie with Mark Paul Gosselaar called The Princess and the Marine mm-hmm. on NBC, which is, this is a true story about this Marine who AWOL'd with this princess from Syria. Heavy. Oprah was on Oprah and everything. Then I did ER, the 150th anniversary of ER, which was the big train wreck with Noah Wiley and Eric LaSalle, and when ER was like huge.
Everybody,
and I had to play this fearful medical student, and that wasn't hard because I was looking at real people I'd seen on TV, and now I was acting with them, and I was like, "What the hell am I doing in here right now?" So that was like my intro. And then I just kind of, you know. I wanted to keep it going, so I'm still peddling, you know what I mean?
And you did. You went on. You were on American Dreams. And
I was on American Dreams. I played this militant guy named Nathan who got kicked out of his mom's house in Mississippi and kind of moved to North Philly and was responsible for starting the Philly riots. And that was historic around a lot of great artists. And, you know, I was moonlighting on a sitcom, so I was just hustling, man, just kicking down doors and, you know, not looking back, so...
In the middle of all that, did you ever go back to the acting class? Did you take private coaching?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or did you stick with your...
Yeah, that's when I began to really study. She became my manager, the acting coach.
Oh, wow.
Mm. She became my manager all the way up until a few years ago. And, you know, I began to really study the craft and really hone it. Because I think acting is like, you got it or you don't, but there's ways that you can hone it and get better at it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an innate ability to kind of tap in and be real and live in front of a camera. But you still have to know how to do it and... You can always get better. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I'm constantly trying to study and learn stuff because you never stop learning how to act. It's an elusive craft, to say the least.
Yeah. What would you say was the hardest kind of hurdle for you coming off the streets, not knowing really like what a headshot is or how auditions really go? What was kind of the biggest hurdle for you making that transition into film?
The biggest hurdle? I don't, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I guess that, just the mechanic, I guess the hurdle might have been off the camera, knowing the politics of it. And like, once the wool is taken off your eyes and you see it, okay. So it's not necessarily who's the best person. That's probably the biggest hurdle that you kind of continuously learn about, just the politics of it and how one, you look behind curtain number one, you know, and curtain number two, could almost behind that curtain could be one project could lead to this and one project could lead to that. You know what I mean? So I just think kind of navigating your way and trying to create a body of work and have some longevity is like the biggest hurdle in just an entertainment period. You know,
so trying to stay focused on the big picture versus just
trying to make good strategic moves that's going to allow you to continue to grow and build on your body of work. It can be tough.
Okay. Well, your body of work was excellent because you landed a huge role in 2006 in Dreamgirls, which is an Academy Award winning film, and you were also nominated for an Oscar as well.
Yeah, this song Patience that I performed in the movie was nominated for an Oscar, which was super cool. You know what I mean? That was like the Oscars. I don't know if y'all been before, but it's the Super Bowl.
I've been outside.
It's the show. It's the show, man. It's like, you know, everything is, the teeth are whiter, the suits are blacker, the heels are higher. You know, it's a good event to be at.
And how did it feel to actually perform that song there just in that moment?
Man, that was crazy. You know what? I kind of didn't really want to soak up the moment then because I didn't want to like look. It's kind of like being on a tightrope, but you don't want to look down. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of just zoned out. But it was pretty amazing. It was a billion people. I think they had just done some type of deal where Japan or Asia was able to see the Oscars again. The stagehand was like, "You ready? Billion people. All right, there you go." And I was like, and it was like J-Lo and Clint Eastwood. Me and my brother were like, I was on stage, I was like Beyonce, you know, it was cool, man. It was like kind of having an out of body experience, really. Looking back, you know, it was fun, man.
And while you were performing, who were you looking at? You know what I mean? Like, I always want to know when
Clint Eastwood and Peter O'Toole.
Wow.
I was like,
now that's a combo.
Let me try to make these cats move. If I can make them move,
everybody will move.
Then I'm doing my thing.
Yeah. I would say so.
You know what I mean? I think I saw a shoulder move or someone's eye twitch or something. So, hey, mission accomplished.
And that was a huge ensemble cast. I mean, Jamie Foxx, Eddie Murphy, yeah. as you mentioned, Beyonce, Jennifer Hudson. And you recorded a song with Jennifer during the movie.
We did.
What was that like to work with her? Because she's just a powerhouse. And that was her year, yeah. too.
That was J-Hud's year. I mean, it was it was great. I mean, she was like my sister. I mean, she was coming in. She was just greener than I was when it came to the acting thing. Yeah. We're both singers. But, you know, just to see her transformation from, you know, us hanging out to where I had to talk to like six big dudes to get around them to talk to her was like that transition was like wow, the power of the machine was pretty amazing. But I mean, being in the studio with her was like being with any other artist. It's a great artist, great vocalist. I hate they cut that scene out of the movie. If you guys could have seen that, the duet, you see it's online, you see it's recording the song, but we had to take it out because of, you know, length of the movie or whatever.
It's on the DVD, though, isn't it?
I think it's on the DVD. I mean, I kicked and screamed to have it in the movie. That was my moment, I felt.
Yeah.
But they didn't listen for some reason. I don't know why. I don't get it. But it happened. They still won their awards.
They did do that. And then who were you closest to while filming? I mean, you had everybody on that film, and it seemed like you guys had a really good time and had a good energy together. Who was one of your favorite people to work with?
I think probably Jamie. You know, Jamie was like one of the homies. You know, he was fresh off the Oscar, but still had that youthful energy. You know what I mean? You could very accessible, life, the center of the room, wherever he was. So he was a lot of fun to work with. And Jennifer was cool. Beyonce was everybody was really cool. But Beyonce, I mean, people wanted to hear that there was like diva-isms going on, but I think everybody had like a healthy respect for each other's talent. So it wasn't too much BS going on, at least from what I could see.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Eddie would show up and he would be cool.
Yeah.
Do his thing. He didn't say much, but he did his thing. So I was just like, you know, glad to be there.
And then we were talking a little bit before the interview started about Beyonce, and she is on tour with Jay-Z and just ended in L.A.
Yeah.
What do you think about all that scrutiny that she's getting right now because of the marriage between the two, and what's your take on it?
I think it's tough, man. I mean, it's hard enough to just to be in a marriage, period, or to be with someone, especially when this transient environment we live in, social media. It's tough to be focused on one person. But when you're the baddest chick in the world.
Baddest.
And he's like very, you know, powerful, slick business mogul, and they've portrayed the marriage as being, you know, the first marriage almost. It's like this thing that we all look to, like they're both rich and talented.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's tough. It's a tall order to live up to, and it takes some, you know, some really focused and humble individuals to stay in that type of situation. So it's, you know, I can't say that I'm shocked, but, you know, I wish her the best, and if she doesn't, you can call me. We can talk. You know, but I'm rooting for her. I got love for Beyonce. I mean, being beside her and working with her, you kind of even get to, you like her even more because she, I think she understands the power she has. So she does a great job of disarming that and when you're in the room with her. So she's super cool and down to earth. And like, cause I've met divas who got a reality show and I'm like, you want VH1? You acting like this?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
I feel you on that.
I'll throw my drink on you right now. But B was super cool and a grinder and a straight hard worker. Yeah. So, you know, I really admire her and I miss her.
Well, if they unfortunately break up, we know where we might find her.
I mean, you know, hey.
Let's not do anything that could lead back to this.
I just want
to
be a
friend. Right, exactly.
Just being a good friend, supportive former cast member is, you know, my duty.
And then from Dreamgirls, you moved on to the miniseries. Is it Comanche Moon?
Whoa.
Now, how do you go from picking what type of project you can pick after you were Academy Award winning, nominated? You know, how do you pick?
I mean, it wasn't like people were like, Keith, will you do our movie? It wasn't like that. It was like my name was almost on the radar, but, you know, I had a bit of it in, but it didn't like, it wasn't like with Jennifer, where it was like the whole world wanted to work. It was, I still had to kind of get out here and make my moves, but I had a nice calling card in my backpack, basically. Mm-hmm. So Comanche Moon came along because Danny Glover played the same role 15 years, the character 15 years earlier, and he was at the time doing Dreamgirls with me. And this 6-hour miniseries came along, and it was historic, and it was something. What's something that I can do that's out of the box now? Because I've done this clean, pristine songwriter, big star thing, and I wanted to get grimy, so Comanche Moon came along, and it seemed like, you know, I'd be on a horse. I was with Val Kilmer and Steve Zahn and some great actors. And it was a classic piece. Lonesome Dove was like 13 Emmys. This is Comanche Moons, which was it was a 4-part series. It's shot out of order. So this is the movie that happened before Lonesome Dove. So it just seemed right, you know. But I mean, the first day I didn't know how to ride a horse. I told him I did.
Anything for the role.
I came out there in a fresh Nike suit, white. On the parade, like, you sure you gonna ride that boy? And I'm like, yeah, I'll ride it. And after that, I was like, yeah, I was hanging upside of a horse. So they taught me how to ride a horse in like a day.
So no stunt double then, I'm assuming.
That's on me. I mean, I had the jackass, you know, and my horse, because the supply horse, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. The brother had to, you got to make yourself useful, bro. This the, right. This the, you know. So before I could sew and cook and fight and all that. So I had to. So I'm 70 miles an hour with 11 horses and riding up an Indian town. I'm like, this is crazy. But it was fun, man. 3 months.
Now, did you have a love for Westerns kind of before that? Do you have a favorite Western that you watched?
I love, what's the one with Emilio Estevez in them?
City Slicker? No, that's not.
Dust Till Dawn.
Like Desperado, but that's not.
You know, it's Emilio Estevez. It's,
no, that's George
Clooney.
I know what you're talking about.
I always miss it. Young Guns.
Young Guns. That's
Young Guns is super hard. I love it. Love Young Guns. So it was kind of like that. You know, who doesn't as a kid, you ride around on a horse shooting up Indians? Yeah. I mean, you know, so it was like, you know, aliens, Indians, you know, I was kind of fulfilling all my childhood fantasies.
There you go.
You know. Aliens, everything.
I mean, you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. You play cowboys and Indians. You play aliens.
Yeah.
Singing. You know,
Cops and Robbers. So that's gonna be the next movie.
Cops and Robbers. Okay. That's a good name.
And then you continued on with working a lot. You were in The Castle, Lie to Me, Love That Girl, White Collar, Second Generation Wayans.
Yeah.
One of your favorite experiences to work? What show was one of your favorite experiences to work on?
They were all cool. I mean, White Collar was cool because we did it. I played this owner of this jazz club in Harlem with Bill Bellamy. We played bowlers. That was pretty dope. Cast, like I played, is just criminal, straight up, you know, two-bit criminal. It was kind of comedic, you know what I mean? So I got to do a bunch of running scenes with that. What was my funnest? Oh, you know what my funnest show was? Dark Blue. Remember Dark Blue? Dark Blue was super hard. That was what me and Omari and Dylan McDermott, and I played this... real slick dope boy. Had a fresh Porsche Panamera when they just dropped. Had the fresh gear, iced out. Was like, this is perfect. You know? This is like, and I know I'm not going to go to jail or die because this is fake. And I got to doing a high speed chase in the back lot in this Panamera. And I got to pistol whip Dylan McDermott with a Tech 9. Oh. You know, this is fucking
nasty.
You know, but that was super fun. And Omari is the homie. Me and Omari actually went to college together. Huh. So that was our first time we got to really work together. So that was cool. That was fun. That was a great show, man. I hate it went away.
Yeah.
Had you ever seen Lie to Me before?
I had seen one episode of it. And I love the lead actor, Tim.
What's
the lead actor's name?
It's not Tim Robbins.
Tim Roth.
Yes.
I loved him from Hoodlum. Remember Hoodlum?
Yes, he was dope in Hoodlum.
He was hard in Hoodlum.
He was dope in Hoodlum.
Super cool dude. They built this really cool, that box they had, that lie box they had, where you go in there and they kind of watch your movements and everything, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
It was a real
cool I actually got set. Hurt on that show because we got this fight scene. I threw my back out on that show. But, you know, all in the day's work.
All in the day's work.
Really. Well, you transition back and forth between TV and film very simplistically, seemingly. How have you been able to do that so easily? I mean, it's more frequently happening now, I guess, like lots of movie stars coming to TV and that kind of thing. But over the years, it hadn't really been that way, and you seem to have had a career that was consistently in that space. How did you?
I don't really have a formula for it. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. You just try to stay up on your craft and try to stay as versatile as you can, you know, and you just swing, you know. You just try to embody the character as best you can, and some you win, some you don't. So I don't know if there's a particular way that you can kind of navigate what you want to do unless you're Denzel Washington and they're dropping scripts on your doorstep. And you're like, no. No. You know, you kind of run at as much as you can and just, you know, I'm a worker, so... If there's a role, if there's opportunity, then I'm going to definitely go seek it and try to get the job. So,
do you have a preference though, creatively, that one that just feels better to you that you enjoy more?
No, I don't. I think it's all about the work. Mm-hmm. You know, I think films stay around forever. You know, and TVs are small moments. Like if you happen to be watching by the TV and you catch a great scene, unless you're a fan of that show, then you may forget about
True.
What happened. So there's a lot of there's good money. It's a constant check. But there's a lot of moments and a lot of work that it takes a long time to build, to lock in an audience mm-hmm. just for Hollywood to say, okay, they know him now. Now let's put him on the big screen for this one movie that will live forever.
Yeah.
You know, like C.C. White will live forever. But, you know, a lot of other characters in the small TV world, they kind of, you know, it's an assembly line, so to speak. So that 60-foot screen, if you can make an indelible impression on that screen, then you can be immortal, so yeah. to speak, as an artist, you know.
And then it seems like there's a lot of efforts right now in Hollywood to increase the diversity, we'll say. And we have Shonda Rhimes, obviously, who's doing great things with ABC. And we have CBS that's making some efforts to kind of change their programming around, even though they got a little bit of criticism as of late for their fall lineup. But do you see a change in Hollywood as far as diversity? And do you think that there's going to be more opportunities for African-American actors since we have Oscar-nominated African-Americans?
I hope so. I mean,
and winners.
I think we've had some change. I think there's still a long way to go. But I think we're having some changes. I mean, I just think that the world, every day the world gets more and more diverse. I mean, this is like in the room, is we're all different shades and sizes. And I think there's still some reluctancy by the powers that be to really truly reflect how diverse the world is. I think it's headed that way. It's starting to get there. And with every nomination or with every successful movie of ethnicity, it moves us along, but I think it's still short yardage.
Yeah.
Looking at the grand scheme of things, at the number of great black actors and actors of color that are there, and the number of those that work consistently are minuscule.
True.
Compared to, you know, the number of Emmy nominees is so vast in comparison. So I think we've made steps, but they're steps. Yeah. So we still got some work to do. We definitely have some work. They still say that it's tough to market those films, which I still really don't understand, because I'm like, you know, you go overseas, you go around the world, it's like this is how the world looks. It's diverse.
Right.
But I think they, you know, y'all hear me.
What would you like to see come to light that hasn't been done as far as like a script or a role? What would you like to see?
You know, there's a lot, man. You mean what kind of movie would I like to see?
Yeah, we'll say movie, because this is the year that, you know, even though 12 Years a Slave won, there was still a lot of criticism of us always going back to that type of format of the slave or the help as an African-American actor. Yeah. So what would you like to see that hasn't been done, or a shift in the perception of what the actor is in a film?
I mean, there's a lot of different things that I'd like to see done. I mean, there's a lot of biopics. I think there's a lot of great stories to be told still by different artists. I think I'd like to see more superheroes of ethnicity. I think they just did the story of the Egyptian gods. I think they're showing right now. I think Chadwick's actually in that one. But I think I would have liked to see more ethnicity along with Chadwick. You know what I mean? Because there's if you're in Egypt, then you're going to be a little tan.
Right, yes. That is for sure. That is true.
You over there by the equator. Yeah. you know, you're going to get a tan. But I just want to see more, anything, anywhere. I just want to see more of these leading roles to be thought of as, this guy could be Asian, this guy could be Indian, this guy could be black, this guy could be, you know, not always the typical of what we see in Hollywood. I just want to see the envelope pushed more, you know what I mean? I think shows like Scandal and stuff like that with Kerry Washington is a great example of that. Yeah. You know, you can't have a black leading female and still get the numbers.
That's true.
In a big way. So hopefully, you know, we'll keep moving that way.
Well, with the biopic topic, I know Lifetime's working on a deal with releasing like a Whitney Houston one, Aaliyah, and a couple other ones.
Yeah.
And the big controversy around them is that, you know, Lifetime is just putting these out and not having anything to do with the families. What's kind of your take with that?
I think you gotta connect with the families. I mean, because they're the closest thing to the depiction of the person.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the families are gonna have the most accurate POV. It may be a little bit biased because of their, but you gotta have their say.
Right.
I don't say it has to be the final say, because, you know, it's like you see, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, mama was like, well, he's just a great kid. I love him.
Right, right.
I love him. Well, you know, he ain't that right.
Right, yeah.
But we'll take that. We'll take what you say and we'll play that. We'll play that element of him. But, you know, so you got to definitely use the family. It's almost, and you don't want to disrespect the heritage. I mean, it's like, you know, if you're going to do a biopic on somebody, then at least go to his love, their loved ones, their bloodline, and respect them at least. Don't just put up what you think you know because of what you've seen, what the media's portrayed. Because as we all know, the reality and perception are completely different. You know, you see these huge stars, and their lives are quite different than that. Maybe they don't. That personality is not that necessarily that person. So if you're going to tell the truth about them, you got to go to the people who love them and grew up with them unconditionally. So to not have their say, I think dilutes.
True.
The process, it dilutes the picture, and it doesn't make it authentic, which I love about James Brown. They were very the family was very involved, and they allowed them to be involved. So I think once they stamped it, then it makes it, you know, it makes it official.
What were some of the things that you were doing for this role, to prepare for this role, and, you know, kind of get into that mindset of that time era? What were some of the research that, in development, that you were kind of?
Well, I mean, me being a musician from the South, I mean, I kind of just tapped into that energy because I feel like if I lived in that era, then I'd be one of these guys on the stage moving around, back of the bus, front of this. You know, I would have been a performer because I am now. And I think once you get into the clothes, you're around the energy of it. You do the research of the actual person. It wasn't that hard.
It just kind of falls into
place. It wasn't like it was so different from my own reality. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't. I mean, the only thing that really was different was me having to learn how to play the bass. Which was pretty terrifying, but I got through it. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but I'm playing a bass. So,
and what was your audition process like?
You know, I actually auditioned for another role. Actually, I auditioned for James, of course, and then I auditioned for my brother who plays Allo Black plays Nate Floyd. So they kind of swapped us for whatever reason. But I was like, cool, man. I just want to be in the film. You know, I'm from Augusta. I went to high school there. You know, James is from Augusta. I knew the family. Yeah. You know, great cast. I wanted to work with Tate Taylor because he's an amazing director. So I'm just glad it worked out. I was able to get on the cast list and, you know, shoot a couple layups.
And what was your favorite scene in the movie?
Favorite scene in the movie? I got a couple. I think when we play Caledonia, when we take over the stage from Little Richard in the that's pretty hilarious. Because it just shows the boldness of, you know, James Brown, just like, you know, you're going to hear me or not, whether you, you know. And the other scene was the night that he performed in Boston, I thought. Because if you watch the YouTube, there's a documentary called The Night James Brown Took Save Boston. You could have shot a whole movie just on that one night alone, because it was like Dr. King died.
Yep.
Government was like,
it's historic.
We got 10,000 Negroes. Yep. They're going to be mad. He said, well, you might as well let them in the arena, or they're going to be in your front yard. So make a decision. But if you look at the actual documentary, you see James Brown, Chadwick movements. That's when he most morphed into James Brown to me, because even some of the arm movements when he told the kid, get off the stage, it looks almost identical to James Brown's movement. And that was just a testament to how much Chad studied this character. So I was really proud of him, just the way he did it, because it's a hard ass character.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
it is.
I was complex. Like, even in rehearsals, I was like, phew, this is gonna be tough. I'm nervous for you, bro. But he did it, you know what I mean? I think he stamped himself, you know what I mean? One of the great performances, I think.
And what do you think of some of the criticism that, as much accolades as the film is getting, it also got a little criticism because they felt like the character of James Brown, they only showed the positive, greater side of him outside of some of the darker times that he had. What do you think about some of those things that are said about that?
I mean, he did a lot of things. I mean, but they touched on it. I mean, you want an hour and a half movie of abuse and, like,
right.
I mean
right.
he's an amazing guy who lived 10 lives in one. So we shot 7 hours of film, so you have to touch on everything, get his point across, and show him 360 degrees. So they didn't shun it, but they showed it, and they didn't dwell on it, because if you look at him overall, the good outweighs the bad. He was a humanitarian. Sure. He's an amazing musician. He's a hard worker. He's persevered.
An activist.
He did things. He went into the war zone for the soldiers, and he was breaking down doors that didn't even exist for a black man in the 50s, in the 60s. So I think those things far outweigh his, you know, abusive. Maybe he was abusive to women. They showed that.
Yeah.
They showed the drug use after, you know, his, but it wasn't all drugs his whole career. As a matter of fact, in the beginning of his career, he was adamant against that stuff. But, you know, life has its ups and downs, so sometimes, you know, people deal with it in different ways. But I think the loss of his son kind of drove him to that. So I think that's just a criticism. There's no way you're not going to have any criticism.
True. Yeah.
When it comes to
they're
James
always find
Brown.
Something.
I mean, yeah.
But you guys delivered the essence of
the essence
of James Brown.
Yeah, I mean, you got it. You felt like you knew him a little bit better. You knew why he did the way he was the way he was, by showing his childhood. I mean, he literally raised himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, most kids would have died or been in jail or never came out, but he continuously to press on. So, you know, they always get mad about that. They want to see the negative. That's what makes people watch, but, you know.
What's your favorite James Brown song?
Man's World is one of my favorites. I love that. And this song called I'll Go Crazy. I actually remade this song called I'll Go Crazy. One of his fillers, and because I was trying. They were doing an album, a tribute album, where they're going to take other artists and kind of redo his music. I don't know if they're still doing it, but I redid a song called "I'll Go Crazy," which is pretty dope with a hip hop spin on it. So, But I mean, he had a lot of great songs.
What was something you learned about yourself as an artist from working on the film and researching it and sort of immersing yourself in James Brown for all those however long you guys shot that you'll take with you going forward?
I don't know what I learned about myself. It's a good question. I don't know what I learned about myself.
Or anything about James Brown that you didn't know?
Well, he was an avid boxer. He could box. He played ball, baseball, and to play baseball. I just think knowing his, I didn't realize how tough his upbringing was.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how, the odds were completely stacked against him for him to be able to, be the greatest hardest working man in show business. I think for me it was validating to be a part of another big project in Hollywood, because they're hard to come by for artists, especially for black artists. So that was validating, because it was like, okay, I'm still here, I'm still peddling, I'm still, you know what I'm saying, I'm still notching them. So that was kind of I think a testament to some. I think James Brown would have been proud of me for continuously to, you know, because I came here, I had a 27-inch TV and a lock and a Foot Locker, and I lived on Coldwater and Ventura. Wow. And that's pretty much how I started. So that was validating to still be going to set with call sheets on a big film. So that was good. I was grateful to be there, you know. But for him, you just learned about how strong he was. He was just a super, super strong guy who, you know, didn't take no for an answer. Like, even the Rolling Stones, I didn't know he was cool with Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger produced the film, but they were in awe of how, you know, commanding he was. There's a scene where he took over the stage and they wanted him to close it, but he closed it anyway.
Yeah. Without closing it, right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He had
to
come after.
Just having that type of resolve and that type of, you know, definitive purpose, you know, is pretty incredible.
And then, speaking of music, you have a new single that you're releasing tomorrow.
Yes.
It is called Famous.
Famous, that's right.
And then it's off an album called Love Episodic.
Love Episodic.
And what can fans expect off of this album?
They can expect me, I call it free form soul. I kind of let the songs kind of write themselves, just kind of dictate. I wasn't so married to hook, verse, and trying to lick you up, lay you down, bend you over, bust you out.
Right.
I said that in a different way. I kind of wanted to get into the nuts and bolts, into the idiosyncrasies of the relationship, how men and women really relate to each other and what makes them tick. So, because, you know, there's a million ways to say I love you. You know what I'm saying? And I think Love Episodic is an episode of love. It's kind of a look at the stages and the POVs of a relationship between a man and a woman. So it's very soulful, and it kind of comes from real life experiences and my interaction with women in different points of my life. And I think the music side of it, just keeping it purely soulful and live instrumentation with real vocals, was influenced by the movie, because you're just around that every day. I'm around James Brown band. I got his bass player teaching me how to play bass. I got Aloe, I got Tariq, Black Thought, Jill Scott. You know, it's everybody around who's truly a musician. So I wanted to really stay true to the art form of it. So I think that's what you're going to hear.
And did you play some of your own instruments on the album as well?
Keys a little bit.
Okay.
Keys a little bit. I'm a singer-songwriter. I can tap out the melodies and then tell the piano man to play it like this. Kind of like James.
Right.
Kind of like James. So, yeah. But, I mean, you'll hear me in every song. I mean, it's my voice, of course, but it's, you know, it's pretty much how I approach R&B and soul music, which is kind of an elusive lost art, I think, right now.
What do you think is missing from music today?
I think integrity is missing a lot. I think it's more formula now. I think the powers that be they love real music, but they won't sell it. They'll put that in front of you, and on the way home, they'll listen to some real shit. Can I curse?
Yeah. Yes, you can.
I just did. I think that's what's missing, is authenticity, and really where you have to really, you know, be saying something and really be able to sing and be able to play. You know yeah. what I mean? I think a lot of times with technology and with formula, you can get around that. And very few artists can really truly do that. And I think the ones that can do that are the ones that will continue to stay every decade as music changes. They'll change their sound, but the authenticity and their talent will always rise to the top. So I think that's what it's missing because, you know, now it's that quick. It's that attention span is quick. You got to yeah. keep putting out music. You know, the kids, they want to hear it. Then they off it. What's next? What's next? So it's kind of hard to create some type, something that lasts.
That's
true. You
know what I mean? And then who are some of the people that motivated you as far as musically as you prepared your album and just creating music overall?
Well, a lot of those guys that I just mentioned who was on set influenced me. I mean, R&B wise, I'm of the Motown era, you know. You know, I was signed to Motown. My mom was almost signed there. I was heavily into Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder. Later on in the 80s as a little kid, I was into, you know, Peter Gabriel and Sting and Duran Duran and Seal. You know, I love Omar. I loved a lot of European artists. I was introduced when the videos first started popping on Friday night. And then hip-hop was heavily in my house. And then in the 90s when Boyz II Men came and Silk and Jodeci and all these male groups came along, I was like, that's what I... When I saw a New Edition concert, I was like, if I could just have the six suit.
And they just performed here, and Bobby Ahern was on point.
If I could just be there, I would be done. Life would be perfect. I wanted to be one of those guys. Mm-hmm. So it motivated me to try to, like, I want to do this. Like, my group in Augusta, we were like a local Jodeci cats. We redid Stay and Come and Talk to Me. We had the combat boots with the long jacket, and I could sing. So a couple times we almost fooled them, I thought. But that really, really, really influenced me. You know what I mean? I wanted to do this.
Can you give us a little sample a cappella of like one of your favorite songs on the album, maybe like a little 5 seconds?
Of what album?
Of your new album coming out.
I can be a star tomorrow, but it wouldn't matter, baby, you know, no, if I didn't have you. Ooh, I wanna be famous for loving you. How could you blame us for trying, boo? I don't need these cars, these movie stars, everything that I do. Just famous for loving you.
I think a line of ladies is waiting at the door. We might have to hold them back.
Come on in.
Panties just melting off.
Come on around.
You got Courtney sweating over here, man.
Oh, it's hot in here.
When will the album drop?
You know what? I'm still finishing it up, so I'm going to say later this year. I'm looking at October, something like that. But I want to get this single. After this single is a song called Love Somebody.
Okay.
And I'm going to kind of let the powers that be dictate. The great thing about being an indie artist is you can kind of call your own shots. You know what I mean? So it'll be out this year, though. So I'll definitely keep you guys in the loop.
Music video?
Video for sure. We're working on a video for Famous right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to wrap up. We have a couple of extra questions we want to ask you to really get to know you.
Let's get it.
Let's start with what is one item on your personal bucket list?
Personal bucket list? I want to run with the Bulls.
What?
Huh? All right. That's scary, but.
Wow.
What's something that fans would be surprised to know about you?
They may be surprised that I like to cook. I'm a little domesticated. I could be a bit of a homebody.
What's your best dish?
Salmon.
Okay. I do and he's healthy.
Healthy?
I do a mean salmon, but then we have...
Like what spice flavors, though? If it's salmon, is it like a lemon?
Well, I do olive oil, lemon, garlic, green onions, Goya, pepper.
A healthy grain on the side?
I'm okay with that.
Healthy brown rice. I should have brought some through. I didn't
listen,
like
next
salmon.
Next interview, you can bring us a couple of food samples. It's all good.
You like salmon. Yeah, so I love to cook. I love to cook fish. You know, I try to eat healthy. And then Twizzlers for dessert.
Twizzlers. That's the go-to. Right. Twizzlers.
What's the last book you read or a book beside your bedside right now?
The last book I read was The Alchemist, which everyone has been trying. Everyone's been trying to tell me to read, and I loved it. It was serious.
What album will you never get tired of listening to?
Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder, and Diary of a Mad Band, Jodeci.
Yes, sir.
Crazy. Oh, and NWA, 100 Miles and Running.
I can't wait for that movie to come out.
Next August, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who inspires you?
I think people who are hardworking people, disciplined people who kind of push through. I mean, that's a long list. I mean, from Obama to my mama, you know what I mean? And everybody in between.
Like that.
Who's really like done something that's like unheard of, and they continue to do it. Like Jordan would come out every night and give you 50 every night. Flu, sick, whatever. I think that consists, because everybody can be great once, but those who are just great all the time, they influence me. They inspire me.
Fantastic. And last but not least, what is one word that you would use to describe yourself?
Hardworking.
We'll take it.
And that is true, because you've had a long career since you've started already.
I feel old, man.
But more great things to come.
Much more life ahead.
Sexy chocolate? Come
on. Sexy chocolate.
Sexy chocolate.
Sexy chocolate.
That's two words, ain't it? That's two words, ain't it?
That's the third single, y'all.
That's the third single. Sexy chocolate.
Yes, Mo.
Hershey remix.
Well, thank you, Keith, for joining us today on Black Hollywood Live Portraits, man. We appreciate it. Congratulations on the single that's dropping tomorrow.
Thank
Famous.
You, brother.
Everybody go pick that up.
Pick it up, download it,
all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And congratulations on Get On Up, man.
It's a movie that's needed.
Everybody should check it out. Keep it at the top of the box office.
Go see it.
Where can your fans find you?
Keith Sings. One word. Keith Sings. Tweet me, Instagram me. My Facebook is Keith Robinson Sings. So anything Keith Sings related is me. And just hit me up. I'll hit you back.
Jesse, where can your fans find you?
DJ Jesse J.
Courtney.
DJ.
Twitter, Instagram, Stuart Starlet.
At Daryl Kristen on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you for watching Black Hollywood Live Portraits with Keith Robinson today.
Yeah.
Go check out Get On Up and buy that single.
Get on up and buy his new single.
Hey.
From producers Maria Menounos, Daryl Kristen, Tiana Hobson, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire BHL crew, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I'm your BHL announcer, Scipio. Instagram me at Planet Scipio. Thank you for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.